Get organized with the Rosie on the House home maintenance app, powered by HomesAuto.
Think about all the digital records about your house, mortgage information, your insurance policy, your home inventory, your maintenance schedule, and store all that information about your house in one place. Turn that into a proactive way to remind you of all the things because we're busy with other aspects of our lives.
Have a history of your home at your fingertips. Get started at rosieonthehouse.com/app.
The future of home ownership, having it all digital in one place.
In the Garden with Jay Harper here at Rosie on the House. Let's get to actual gardening, eating gardening, not just lawns and hedges and stuff, but fall, you'd mentioned planting time, winter vegetables. This is a great time to get your beds ready and stick some seeds in the ground.
We can do direct seeding in the ground. We can plant already started transplants. You know, what you're planting this time of year, we've mentioned before, it's anything you would probably eat, the root, the leaf, or maybe a modified flower or stem of. So, you know, quickly, root, you know, carrots, beets, radishes, turnips, lettuce, spinach, chard, and then cauliflower, cabbage, broccoli, Brussels sprouts.
I only did it 1 year, but we had a very successful sweet potato harvest 1 year. And it was even just, it wasn't even from seed. It was just a potato that had kind of started to root out in the pantry. And I'm like, what the heck? Just stick it in the ground. Let's see what happens. And man,
yeah, sweet potato is a little different. Although it is a quote unquote technically root crop, you would plant those in the spring and then you harvest them in the fall or early winter.
I guess that's right, because we were picking them up for Thanksgiving sweet potato meal.
Yeah.
That's right.
And you usually start either, you can make slips for sweet potatoes off of an old sweet potato, and you just kind of plant them in some loose soil, and as they start to sprout, then you can take those and plant them in the ground. And they do very well here. They love the heat. You see a lot of the ornamental sweet potato in the landscape all summer, the real lime green leafed plant and the real dark purple leafed plant have become very popular as for summer color because they are so darn heat tolerant and they love the heat. So, and sweet edible sweet potatoes the same way. They absolutely love the heat. They take up a lot of room. So, which isn't all bad in the summer. It's a great cover crop. You know, it can cover your, you know, you get into late summer vegetable gardens, they're not so productive anyway. Why not have something that's kind of a pretty green ground cover, keeps the weeds down, covers the space. They do well here. So, but those you would be harvesting usually about Thanksgiving time. So that's a fun thing to do for the summer.
And so let me redirect us back to the fall.
Okay. All right. So, yeah. So yeah. Carrots and beets and turnips, those kind of roots do very well here all winter. And the nice thing about our winter garden is that it's a very long season. So from mid-September to maybe even into April or early May, depending on the weather. So you can plant multiple crops of things. You know, sometimes the complaint about a garden is you get too much at one time. You know, how do I use all this lettuce, you know, or whatever. But so you could plant a little bit, wait a few weeks, plant another, you know, do multi-cropping of things spread out over the season so you don't have, you know, too much spinach. Plus, you know, you do have a room equation there. Not everybody's got a big enough garden to grow everything all at once. So, you know, you can stage and rotate and stagger some things in there so you can have a little variety, you know, that you might otherwise not. So think about doing that. And then plant what you like to eat. Just because it's time to plant kale and it's very popular with people, if you don't like it, don't plant it. There, I said it. Kale. I get forced to eat kale once in a while, and it's, you know.
It's chalky.
I tolerate it.
It's very chalky.
I tolerate it.
Enough ranch will take care of anything.
Yeah, right? Yeah. You know what? I will say one thing about it. In things like soup or stews, it does stay kind of crisp, so it's not bad that way. But in a salad, yeah, no thanks.
No thanks. So planting and growing and gardening, you know, you were talking earlier about driving around and getting ideas and inspiration. With the amount of hardscapes that are available now, you know, break out of the thought process of garden has to be in the ground in a row, in a rectangle. You know, you can have gardening as a architectural feature in your landscape.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, with, you know, you can build them out of really nice, you know, stack stone planters or wall stone from the various companies like Bellegarde. And you know what I've kind of have started liking, I've got one I'm going to add some more, are the metal water troughs, horse livestock troughs. That I think is kind of a cool look, depending on your look and that sort of thing.
And they make great planters. And is it kind of like a rectangle shaped with round ends, so it's kind of like a long oval,
there's,
I guess.
Ovals, there's circles, I've seen triangular ones.
You can get them tall, you can get
different
them,
heights, so you can vary the height. So that's like I said, it's architectural, very pleasing to the eye. And you know, as we get a little older, it's nice to not have to get down on your hands and knees and, you know, stay a little more upright when you're gardening.
And if you were going to take an old galvanized stock tank and do that, or a brand new one, doesn't have to be an old one.
Right.
You would have to drill a few holes in it first, right? Let's talk about the proper prep work inside a
container. So they typically come with a drain hole somewhere along the bottom on one of the edges, which might suffice for drainage. You could draw some holes. My understanding is now, and I haven't seen one, but they actually, because they've become so popular as planters, they're making them without bottoms in them.
Oh.
so that you can just literally set it on the ground.
Especially with the cost of metal these days.
Because the bottoms will eventually rust out anyway on the other ones, has been my experience. But so drill some holes. Make sure you've got good drainage. And then, you know, they're so deep, you don't need to go buy good, expensive potting soil to fill that whole thing. Put a little gravel or rock at the bottom, several inches of that, you know, and build it up that way so that, you know, maybe you only have 6 to 8 to 10, maybe 12 inches of good potting soil when you're all done at the top. So, yeah. So drainage is a key on those.
And you could do it where, you know, if you had a little bit of an elevation, you could do a taller one and then a smaller one stacked on top of it and kind of have like a dimensional.
In right inside each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do two big ones together and then a smaller one that kind of goes over the two top one and make it kind of like a tiered pyramid.
That'd be kind of cool.
You know, have on the topper ones, you could have your vegetables that are more like vine or weeping that kind of cascade down. And you know, there's something else called companion planting that I haven't done a lot of research into, but there's a lot of people that'll take it very seriously. Like if you plant this vegetable, plant that vegetable because of the nitrogen and this plant helps that one, and it just makes the two of them stronger together.
Yeah, and then just, you know, if you're planting in any kind of raised box planter, confined area, you know, you need to take into account the growth pattern and the growth habit of those plants. If it's something that is going to trail, well, put it on the edge and let it just spill over the edge so it doesn't take up all of your room on the inside. So, yeah, you can put trellises on the backside and trellis things like melons and cucumbers and cucumbers and melons. And actually put them up on a trellis so they don't take up room. And that adds some interest, kind of a backdrop to the garden, to have a kind of a really cool maybe wrought iron or metal trellis on the back of that. So a lot of options.
And it cuts down on your need for having like a barrier against rabbits and dogs. And obviously that cats can still jump up in there and you got to handle that differently, but you don't need quite the plant prison from ground squirrels and rabbits getting in it.
Yep. Just the birds though. Yeah. So there's always them, but yeah, it does gets things up off the ground so that the, you know, some of those critters aren't quite as able to take advantage of your garden.
So birds aside, that's a different tactic.
It is, and it can get a little difficult to manage, but yeah.
And sometimes you can grow enough that you got a little bit that
they got to eat too, right?
Bird, you know,
yeah,
exactly. Save a little for the birds. Right. What kind of insects are common that people, if they're just coming over to Arizona from California or they move from the Midwest, what kind of insects can they be expected to be combating?
Well, this time of year, fall is when we see a lot of caterpillar activity. And especially this fall, this summer, we've seen it all summer. If people have seen the amount of little butterflies and moths with all the rain in the desert and the foliage for them to feed on, we've had a pretty extraordinary population explosion of caterpillars. So especially on leafy green things, if you're growing flowers in your garden, they love geraniums. So just be watching for little, and they're hard to find. I mean, they're green. They can be teeny and still do a lot of damage. So caterpillars be the one big thing through the fall and in early winter months. We don't see, that's the other nice thing about gardening this time of year is that the insect or bug activity is typically a lot lower than it is in the spring and summer.
So there's a bonus, natural cycle of things.
So if you see butterflies or moths, you've got caterpillars somewhere. So just be watching for those.
And you said the little ones take damage. It's amazing how big they can get and you still don't see them.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you're out.
Very well camouflaged. Yeah, that's their self-defense. If they were easy to see, they'd be gone. The birds would have them all picked off for you. But and the nice thing about caterpillar control is there's some really very effective, very safe controls for that, other than picking them off, if you can find them. Bacillus thuringiensis, BT, Dipel, all kind of names for the same. It's biological control. If you're not a caterpillar that goes through metamorphic stages, it's not going to affect you a bit. And then spinosad is another good one. That's an organic approved insecticide that works very well on caterpillars as well. So,
and these are ingredients. So if somebody's going to a garden nursery center to ask for it, they're not going to give you spinosad.
So spinosad might be under a brand name, from Bonide might call it something, or Fertilome might call it something. It's probably not going to be called spinosad. So you'll have to ask for that. And I've seen, so BT can be called BT, it can be called Thuricide, it can be called Dipel, a bunch of different things. So go in, tell them you got caterpillars and you want something safe to use. They'll fix you up.
They got plenty of options available. We've got one segment left here in the garden with Jay Harper here at Rosie on the House.